Chapter 8. The following morning, Mirko and Donnacha walked to the library to begin their day's work. Passing the chapel, they could hear the monks chanting a psalm. They go out, full of tears, with seed for the sowing. And Mirko thought how smoothly it would go if translated into Irish. That's so appropriate for their situation here, he mused aloud. Let's hope that the end of that verse will come true for them, that they'll be full of joy carrying sheaves. Patrick might say, if he were here, that the Lord will surely be with them always, as he promised, even to the end of time. Amen to that, Father Mirko. They certainly have had a hard struggle here. But may I speak freely? You do anyway, Donnacha, so go ahead. There's a temptation here for us when we need to resist. And what temptation might that be, Donnacha? A temptation to get distracted. I think we'd both like to stay longer with these good people, helping them as much as we could. It'll be hard to leave in 2 days' time, but we have to remember our quest. We're not seeking building work, we're seeking Patrick. We're not going to prolong our stay, Donnacha. We both know our home community is depending on me to write the life of Patrick, and that's what I'm going to do, be assured of that. Entering the library, they got to work immediately, Mirko reading Ulton's book with full concentration, and Donnacha writing out on vellum the information they had collected so far. By midday, Mirko had completed his third intensive reading of Ulton's patrician episodes. Donnacha, writing fast with no decoration or illumination, had finished his notes. Now, said Mirko, leaning back on his stool, remind me of the points I need to discuss with Abbot A. Donnacha consulted his sheet of vellum. Certainly, Father. Firstly, why was Patrick called Cuthrica? Second, the list of miracles. You said we'd need our abbot's approval for that. That'll probably be for later on, Mirko interrupted. A may want to study them. And thirdly, Donnacha resumed, the failure of Palladius' mission. And if you want to hear what we identified for further investigation, there are three of those as well, namely, land at where, Cuala, question of deer, Meath, and where is Benavam to Bernier? All three geographical questions, I notice, and it looks as if we'll find more to investigate before we leave. After a light meal in the monastery kitchens, Mirko went to find Abbot Uchi and asked if he would be free that afternoon. Yes, said the abbot, we'd better press ahead with our work. I don't know how much longer the Lord intends to leave me in this world. Back in the library, with Daglan in attendance, Uchi took up the Tara episode. Now that Tara visit, he began, the one witnessed by your monastery's founder, Fiuk. There's an account of that in Ulton's book, as you'll have seen. Yes, I've just read it 3 times at Mirko, but for such an important event, it seems very short and not very clear. It tells us a certain amount, of course. We learn that Patrick had his acolyte Benignus with him, that his Easter incense annoyed King Lara and his druids, that there was a trial by fire and a fight with the druids in which Patrick and Benignus miraculously came off best, and that Lara refused to accept the faith. And that's pretty well all there is about the Tara visit. And it just isn't enough, Donnacha muttered. Ulton had hoped to find out more, Uchi replied, but he fell ill and died before he could explore and assess the traditions further. It's more than we knew before, Father Abbot, but it's another matter we'll have to look into. Donnacha, where does that note go in the memory house? Father Mirko, since we're putting 3 points back to the end, the Tara visit now goes on the bottom shelf of the number 2 red cupboard. We're putting a note with it saying, for further investigation. And the next point is, death of Patrick. Here again, said Uchi, the Lord didn't grant Ulton time enough to do the job in full. What there is, you'll have seen in his book, 2 Thutha fought for custody of Patrick's body. Each of them thought they had it, and the right body ended up being buried by the sea at Saul rather than at Armagh. Now that episode was the last one Ulton composed, I don't say wrote, because at that stage he was getting too ill to write. No, he dictated it with some difficulty. He must have known a lot more than what you've read in the book. After all, he was bishop for years, not far from where Patrick died. But as I say, he was ill and his memory was beginning to fail. At an earlier time, I do remember Ulton mentioning to Cogitosus and Tyrachon that the burial place was chosen on the advice of a voice from a bush and that Patrick lived to be 120 years old. But those points didn't get into his book. As for Patrick's lifespan, there was the problem that our visiting scholar thought Patrick was only 111 when he died. Then again, we all had a feeling that those figures were just a poetic way of saying that he lived a long life. Ulton had said that there were signs and wonders at the time of Patrick's death, but towards the end of his own life he didn't seem to remember what they were. I'm afraid this is another case where you've more work to do, Mirko. Indeed it is, Abbot Uchi. Note that, please, Donegal. Donegal was now beginning to struggle mentally with the entries for the memory house. The abbot, a perceptive man, seemed aware of this. Daglan, he called. Please find a couple of writing tablets for Brother Donegal. Donegal, he went on, I think you've been making some notes this morning. Perhaps you'd find it helpful to continue that during our talks. I would indeed. Thank you, Father Abbot. Father Mirko, said Uchi, if you wish, I can allow you to take Ulton's book with you when you go, as a gift or a loan, whichever you prefer. I have the original myself, and I can think of no one who could make better use of the copy than yourself. I'd be deeply grateful to take it as a loan, Father Abbot. So be it then. Let's turn now to the three cogitosus notes that we're taking together. Patrick's owner, Ulich, back to the slave owner, and visit to Fucklut. Remember, Uchi went on, that Patrick's confessio nowhere tells us the location where he spent his time as a slave. He only once names a place in Ireland, and that's when he says, I thought I heard at that moment the voice of those who were beside the wood of Fucklut near the Western Sea. So where were the woods and the mountain where he was spending every day looking after flocks? Ulton and Tyrconn still hadn't resolved that question when Cogitosus was here. Tyrconn was convinced that Patrick's location was in Tyrconn's own province, Connacht, where there is in fact a mountain named after the saint. He claimed there were powerful and unbroken traditions to that effect, and quoted all sorts of learned men, historians and analysts, but none of them readily available for questioning. Ulton had a completely different opinion. As you know, he had been a bishop in the north for many years. He maintained that the traditions there were so strong and so widely held as to be simply unquestionable. Patrick's place of slavery had been near Slemish in the territory of the Dáil Nárada, Deadlock. Then Ulton cleverly pointed out that anyone who questioned the Slemish belief in favour of somewhere in the far west could hardly be regarded as a supporter of the Armagh Parochia. Tyrconn was shaken by this. His ambition, you'll recall, was to be a leading Armagh supporter. Finally, he said he'd go to the north himself to form an opinion, and the then abbot gave his approval. Well, he was back within a month or so. He had visited Slemish, listened to the Oluna, analysts, even poets, and probably got convinced by the Armagh establishment. Anyway, he was ready now to accept the Slemish location, so that seemed to be settled. Then there was the question of back to the slave owner, as Cogitosus' notes put it. Did Patrick go back to the scene of his slavery immediately he arrived as a missionary, or not until much later? If the voices that called him in his dream were from Fucklut by the Western Sea, why would he feel it a higher priority to go to Slemish straight away? In Tyrconn's view, he probably went to Slemish at a much later stage, and then only to visit the slave owner's children, whom he had been teaching while in captivity. That last idea was a story Tyrconn had picked up from some Scaly, and I think he had doubts about it himself. They put that question aside and turned to the matter of Fucklut. Where was it? Tyrconn said that any life of Patrick would have to make clear that Fucklut was in Connacht, that province being near the Western Sea, as Patrick said at the Confessio. Naturally, Patrick had to go there as soon as possible, in response to the voice of those who were beside the wood. No need to be too specific about that, Ulton maintained, and he was exceptionally obstinate about it. Then he revealed what you might call a secret weapon. Many years ago, he told Tyrconn, on a visit to the Clonmacnoise Monastery Library, I read their copy of the Confessio. Imagine how surprised I was to find that text saying that the voices Patrick heard were from Silva Virgulti instead of Silva Fucluti. And when I made inquiries, what should I hear of but a place called Cuil Clete, not very far from Slemish? And Cuil Clete, Father Tyrconn, is the Irish for Silva Virgulti, the wattle wood. Well, Tyrconn was absolutely furious. Things got so heated that the two of them couldn't stay sitting down. You should have seen them pacing around the library arguing, Tyrconn tall, thin and intense, with an incisive, cutting speaking voice. Ulton, nearly as old as I am now, but well able to put his views across, despite a tendency to gabble and spit when he got excited. I was really afraid they would come to blows, strange as that may seem for two holy men. What you say is total nonsense, Bishop Ulton, Tyrconn snapped, all deference forgotten. It's obvious that nowhere near Slemish is by the Western Sea. You're being stupidly narrow-minded, Ulton came back at him. Can't you see that what's east or west of you depends on where you're standing? For God's sake, if you were in the land of the Danes talking about the Western Sea, you'd probably mean the sea between you and the east coast of England. Patrick was a Briton, so he could well call the sea between us and Britain the Western Sea. It would be west of him. Rubbish, shouted Tyrconnel. He wrote the Confessio in Ireland, he says so. Ah, said Ulton smugly, but he was writing about an experience he had at a time when he was not in Ireland. Tyrconnel was scarlet in the face. I'd never seen him like that. He had always been tightly self-controlled. Hoping to cool things down, I nerved myself to interrupt and ask whether they might like to take a calming break and drink some ale, which I had on call. They ignored me. Ulton announced he was going to take the Virgulty place name, not Fuclutty, when he got round to writing his Life of Patrick. Tyrconnel said this was another example of Ulton's blind, rabid, anti-Western prejudice. You think we're all savages in Connacht, that's why you want to shut us out of everything. It's you who were blinded by your exaggerated local loyalties, Ulton told him. What a pity you seem incapable of seeing the broader picture. And he went on to widen the discussion by criticising some of Tyrconnel's opinions expressed from time to time on how the saint's life should be written. Instead of a work that would edify people and help to lead them to salvation, he said, you seem to want a sort of travel guide and real estate list claiming church after church for Patrick, which would be all very well if it didn't take up the vellum that should be devoted to inspirational spiritual writing, as in the Confessio itself. And what's more, you also seem to favour getting Patrick to curse every tooth you don't like, bless each one you do like, and spend far too much time west of the Shannon. Well, when I write my Life of Patrick, it certainly won't be on the lines you want. You can do it without me then, Tyrconnel growled. I refuse to cooperate any longer with a stupid, prejudiced old fool like you who proposes to ignore reality and produce a misleading and distorted account. In fact, I'll write my own Life of Patrick one day when I've made my career in the church, and I won't write it here either. This place is stifling me. It doesn't offer sufficient scope for my talents. I'm now going to tell my friend the abbot all I've just told you. And he stormed out, pursued by Ulton's parting words. Good riddance then, Father Tyrconnel, and my sympathies to any monastery that suffers the affliction of your presence. Well, that was the last I saw of Tyrconnel for a very long time. Next morning he was gone. Later that day the abbot arrived in the library to speak to Ulton, and very cross he was. We've just lost a highly talented member of our community, he complained, and it's all your fault. We had differences that we couldn't reconcile, Father Abbot, Ulton told him. Only one of us can decide what should or shouldn't appear in this monastery's future Life of Patrick. That's my responsibility. Of course, you could lift that burden from my shoulders if you wish, but there might be hard feelings about that in Armagh. I'm not lifting any burden from you, the abbot declared, but I'm commanding you to work only with a copy of the Confessio we have here, and that means you'll accept Silva Fuclutty, not Virgulty, as Tyrconnel so sensibly suggested. Or if not, you can live and write somewhere else. So Ulton had to agree to that order, which wasn't too unreasonable when you think about it. But he still had no intention of writing that Fuclut was in Connacht. Abbot Uckey stopped and drew breath, tired after this long account. So that was the famous break-up, said Mirko thoughtfully. Did you ever see Tyrconnel again? Yes, once, said Uckey. Some years ago, just before the plague, he arrived here to celebrate Mass for the repose of Ulton's soul and to pray at his grave. Tyrconnel was a changed man, much more open and moderate. He had spent some time in the Kells area, not too far from here. Became a bishop later and moved to Connacht. He had aged a lot. He seemed to regret his tussle with Ulton, spoke highly of him, apologised for his own rudeness, and asked to copy Ulton's book. He had even brought a scribe with him. I agreed, of course. He said he'd write his own Life of Patrick as soon as he had the leisure to do it. The work of managing his diocese was very heavy, it seems. And did he write one? Mirko asked. Not to my knowledge, but he might be writing it now for all I know. We don't often get news from Connacht. But how on earth, asked Donnacha, could two holy men ever have got into such a row? Mirko turned to him and spoke from his own greater experience. Donnacha, he said, holy men are still men and they experience stress and temptation like anyone else. The Lord may even send them extra temptations to temper them like gold in the furnace. But now we need to apply what Abbot Uckey has been telling us to our own work. As to back to the slave owner, we may be able to find out more about when Patrick went back to Slemish, and I think we must accept Slemish as the scene of his captivity. When I start writing, I won't commit myself to a location for Fuclut unless we find important new evidence, which of course we might. So that gives us two new points for further investigation. We might also have to do more research after the discussion with Abbot A if he doesn't resolve all the questions we're going to raise with him. And then we'll have to connect up the information into some sort of continuous narrative. Abbot Uchi rose to his feet to signal the end of the session. Leaving the library, they walked out into heavy rain. Daglón hurried up with a leather cloak to shelter the abbot. Mirko and Donnacha raised their hoods. Work on the orphanage building had been suspended, but the clunk of an axe on wood could be heard from a partly roofed shed. Phelim had decided to cut logs for the monastery fires. Donnacha went over to him to explain that they would be leaving for Sleaty the next morning. In the entry to the stone chapel, Mirko spoke to the abbot. "Tell me, Father Abbot, do you have scribes here?" "We have only one, and he has only wooden tablets to write on. All our vellum was stolen or burnt during the raid." Mirko called Donnacha back. "Brother Donnacha, didn't we get more vellum than we expected at Kildare due to your marketing skills with the inks?" Yes, we got nearly twice the usual amount." "We could spare about a third of it, couldn't we?" "Well, I suppose so." "Good. Abbot Uchi will introduce you to his scribe. You will give him one third of the Kildare vellum." "Certainly, Father." "Abbot Uchi, that's to show our appreciation of all you've done for us. And I intend to ask Abbot A to let Phelim come here to our Brecon. Your need of him is clearly greater than ours." "I must thank you twice then," said the abbot. "But the reward that pleases me most is to know that a worthy life of Patrick is on the way."